Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 360 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Todd, joined with Joe. How we doing today, Joe?
Why is 360 not an anniversary thing? You know, it's like 360 degrees, 365 should be an anniversary sort of thing, because that's the number of days in a year. But isn't it really, do we still believe that it's actually 364 and a fourth, which is why we have the leap year of a year? Is that the line of garbage that we still believe?
I think it is. I think, and I always feel bad for the people born on leap years, on the leap day.
Right.
Because then, you know, then it, you know, you just, how old are you? Are you 15? Are you three? You know what I mean? I don't understand all that. The math, and as long as you don't schedule a pay-per-view on leap year when there is no leap year, you'll be okay.
Oh my goodness. Did you?
I only watched the first set. I hear there's a new set of them out.
They're good. They're not terrible.
Okay.
But just as you mentioned that, notable people with February 29th birthdays.
Mm-hmm.
Professional wrestler Sting.
Kabuki Man.
Right. Anthony Sabato Jr.
Tony the Shoe.
Sabato is
the Spanish word for shoe.
Mm. Alex Rocco, who does the voice of Roger Myers Jr. On The Simpsons, the guy who runs Indian Scratchy.
Okay, yeah, right. I know who that is.
Here are two free passes to Itchy and Scratchy Land.
But we have, there's five.
Here are two free passes. That's better.
That's right. Any else?
No one notable.
Okay.
That's it.
All right.
But more notable, Todd, is this podcast. What do we have to talk about on this week's show?
That's right. We have a WizardCon that's not from Wizard the magazine.
Oh, man.
Then we have a magazine that's from Wizard, and also lenticular covers and how you order them exceed or match. It's a long story. Also, cons, free digital books and sales, what we read from last week, which was Southern Bastard 17, which was the book we were both looking forward to most,
right.
Batman 29, and Star Wars 34. What we're looking forward to this week, Todd and Joe have issues, which was G.I. Joe 21, the silent issue. And also, at the end, I'm going to discuss, because I don't think Joe watched the episodes, just my views on Defenders, the new Netflix series.
Oh, how little you know me, Todd. We could play a game, and you could guess how many episodes. Is that your guess right now that I watch zero episodes of Defenders?
That is my guess, that you watch zero episodes.
Oh, we'll cross that bridge when we come to, won't you?
Okay.
All right. One of us will have egg on our face at the end of this.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness. So, let's get into it. It's a little bit of a light news cycle. You know, it's the summer. I don't make excuses why there's light news. So this is where we talk about weird news items, like this September in Baltimore, not where Baltimore Comic Con is held, but the folks who do the quote-unquote popular Doctor Who cons are doing a Potterverse con. About the world of Harry Potter.
Ooh.
Now,
are you going?
Well, my wife doesn't know that it's a thing.
All right, let me get texting on that.
Right, she's asleep, and I'll just steal her phone and delete the text.
Okay.
But I don't know nothing about no Doctor, or I almost said Doctor Who. Jeez, I'm crow. I don't know nothing about no Harry Potter, right?
Right.
But I don't know if the announced guests that they have are really going to move the needle.
What? Do they have you're a wizard, Harry? Either the guy who says it or the Harry wizard?
It does not appear as though they do.
Ah, then you don't have anybody.
If you don't have any, at least one of the top build cast, and I'm not even saying got to have all of them. Give me one.
Right?
Give me one. And we aren't even close.
get me the guy who, at least get me the guy who was the CGI imp guy. That's what I need.
Give me a Weasley brother or something, right?
Okay.
Right. See, at least I know that much.
Give me a Timothy Hunter. That's what I say.
If you get thumbed in the eye and squint.
That's right. During the eclipse.
Right. Now, it is in the Inner Harbor area, so it is near where Baltimore Comic Con is held.
Mm-hmm.
And the prices aren't too outrageous, of course, but it's a two-day thing, and I don't know how, with such limited guests, they're going to be able to fill 2 days worth of Harry Potter Con. And this is strictly based on my extreme bias against Harry Potter.
They're going to have some hot wand talk.
I guess. Now, obviously, I think if they... I have a lot of thoughts about this, because Harry Potter is hot right now.
Mm-hmm.
Due to the Universal Parks, you know, having their themed areas, and the California version of it just continually, like, enveloping the rest of the land around it to make it bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right.
If they did the first con in conjunction with the parks, near the parks, in either Florida or California or something like this, it just seems like Baltimore might not be the best place to launch this. And again, I could see this taking off eventually, but they're going to need bigger name guests.
You need one of the big names, or you need Rowling.
Forget about it. But I don't think she's leaving her house in England for, like, less than a mil, you know?
Yeah, but she should want... to get, she needs this extra income. That's, she needs to get
Does
on
she?
This. And no, she doesn't. But she should, if she was smart, if she would, and she's not, because she only made $1 billion and I can barely pay my bills each week. I look at it as just go to the first one and start the brand. Do you know what I mean? Like, and then roll in just, Make Harry Potter's like there as far as I'm concerned of like things that will be around forever. But help cement that. That's the way I look at it.
Now, do you think that this would be a bigger deal even with no big name folks if the first one was in the UK?
It would be bigger, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore just seems. I know maybe it's the territories, as we always joke.
Right.
But I think it would be bigger if it was in New York or California. Like, especially like you said, near the parks. That would be huge. And then you need one of the big names. And then you could cement some of that stuff into and make it its own con. I honestly think the Potter stuff has the potential to do that. And, you know, but you need, like, what we said. So we'll see, though.
Mm-hmm.
We going, or?
Oh, yeah, I'll meet you there.
All right.
You drive down first, you get the you buy the tickets, you get the hotel, and I'll meet you there.
We got free Baltimore Comic Con tickets. Maybe we can get free Potter Con tickets.
I don't know if we want that.
Right. Get in the blimp and head down.
I think the blimp is in the shop for the summer.
That's right.
The humidity is really playing with the somethings.
That's right. When the air is hot, it's hard to get a hot air balloon high. So, and then we have our little Long Box Hero cycle that goes with it now. So we're all good to go.
Yes. So we had discussed before on the show about Wizard with the Comic-Cons and the magazines and the so forths. We got the tease of what's going to be going on. There's going to be more actually officially rolled out this weekend. At Wizard World Chicago, this weekend, it looks as though they are doing the magazine, but they're also going to be doing more of like a digital daily sort of news service thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like the magazine might be quarterly, but again, we don't have the 100% full announcements. It's just a little bit has come out to just say, hey, we're back. We're going to make our big announcement at Chicago this weekend.
Right.
I will get the first issue of Wizard Magazine.
I wonder what it's going to have. Hopefully it'll have Twisted Toy Fair Theater and all that good stuff. But we'll see. I wonder if, God, I hope they push the speculator market.
Mm-hmm.
Just do what you know. You know what I mean? And get in on that, because especially with a lot of stuff that's going on, they could help that with figures and stuff like that. And hell, with a lot of these variant covers and stuff like that, there's a whole new, you know, world out there for Wizard to help inflate the industry and then have it pop. Okay.
So do what brought you to the dance and eventually ran you out of business.
Yep. Don't change a thing.
Right.
That's your business plan.
I wouldn't be surprised if, much like the Image, you know, like how Image has their own previews, mm-hmm. that they give you the first couple for free to suck you in.
Well, yeah, that could happen. Mm-hmm. And I doubt we'll get any giveaways like they used to do it back in the day.
Right.
Unless they're, you never know, they might, yeah, who knows, they might have exclusive digital one halves.
Oh, that'd be interesting, like get a deal with either Comixology or mm-hmm. some other publisher or something like that.
Because I know, like that's one of the things that make me think, like, what Wizard was popular for back in the day in a good way. You know, in the toy fairs, they did their figures and stuff like that. You'd, like, but that's just so expensive now, you can't get away with any of that. But a one-half and stuff like that from Wizard, but digitally, would be interesting. And then you could promote it, that you can only get it from their site from so long or whatever. I think that would work.
Hey, you just do it simply like how Marvel and DC do theirs, you know? You buy right. the issue, and there's, like, the code, and the redeem code to Comixology. You go to Wizard's site or whatever it is, and there you go.
And Bob's your uncle.
Bob's your uncle. So, yeah, I'll be watching this with a close eye this weekend over the next couple weeks to see what shakes out of this new Wizard magazine.
Sorry. And I'll just read your copy.
Right. Mine will be covered with mud and cookies after I'm done with it.
Oh, boy. Like my Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles hardcover?
You know, I always say, I'm like, oh, I need to include that picture with the show notes. That one I might include this week's show.
Your child mucking up my expensive hardcovers?
Exactly.
Ugh.
Or in his bassinet next to it, and we picked up his hand and put it near your thing.
Ugh, don't ever do that again.
Now I'd be a little bit more worried about him getting his filthy mitts on any of your books.
Ugh. Kids.
Oh, listen, children are our future. I just made that up.
That, you know, there's nothing more of a treasure than a child's laughter.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, moving along to the final, and I would say maybe biggest news story, is if you do not follow your local comic book shop on social media, or maybe you don't have a local comic book shop, I recommend that you follow the comic shop Big Bang Comics. I think they're in the UK somewhere. Yes? Ireland,
yes.
Maybe?
I'm not sure. It's the UK, which is the greatest country in the world.
Right.
Go ahead.
So they went on a big, long Twitter thread, as they are called, where, you know, you tweet out about 10, 15, 20 times about something going on, and, you know, this is what you do. And they do this on a regular basis, where they talk kind of freely and openly about how certain books are selling and continuing to sell, and like, oh, this crossover helped this book, but not that book. You know, it's a very good glimpse, because they are a pretty big shop in Ireland, right?
Right, and they talk about business practices and customer practices, and like you said, they shoot from the hip with a lot of this stuff.
Right.
So, I like that.
Right, and our retailer does this as well, but again, of course, you know, our retailer is much smaller than one that covers all of most of Ireland, where mm-hmm. our retailer does, you know, it's the biggest little shop in, like, probably the Northeast, I'd say.
Right.
So they kind of went into what Marvel is doing upcoming with they're doing lenticular covers. Great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Never saw that before or since in recent years.
Right.
So I guess it came out that, and I think we knew at the very least with the DC ones, that you were allowed to order as many or as few as you want. And there was no
right.
restriction. If you wanted to order 100 of any one issue or if you wanted to order 0, mm-hmm. you could. And much like with Marvel's normal variant ordering practices, to get these lenticular covers are ludicrous.
Right.
They give an example that to get the lenticular cover on the first issue of the Amazing Spider-Man Marvel Legacy, they have to order more than 170% of whatever their numbers were on Amazing Spider-Man 27, which was an issue from about 6 or 7 months ago.
Right. The phrase that rings through comicdom retailers is meet or exceed, which is ridiculous. Like, especially when, I mean, if, all right, maybe meet the numbers that you sold this issue for, like a past issue. But when they start throwing in percentages that are 170% of what you ordered this book on, and then they never just do this random book. Like whatever that book was that you were talking about, it's probably like a tie-in to something that you probably bumped the numbers up on anyway. So it's probably not the, like a typical issue that they try to lock it to stuff that you're going to overorder anyway, because maybe a tie into the big event, because you're like, all right, you're gonna order your numbers of Spider-Man. Then with the Secret Empire tie-in, you might buy five or six more because you might have a customer who buys every tie-in. So it's always bumped up a little bit, and it just makes people not want the retailers not want to buy the books, because what are they going to do with the extras that they buy? You can't mark up the variants to make that money back. You're burning money to do this.
Right, and that's kind of what they go into is, saying that customers might prefer the lenticular books instead of the regular covers, but now what do we do with the regular covers? Throw them away, sell them below cost, and lose money. And they proceed to say that for the first time in 6 years, we're no longer playing the game. We're not going to do this with Marvel. And they said that they've had contact with 70 or so other retailers around the world, and that they're going to make a stand to no longer jump through these hoops for Marvel. And they said that they've brought it up to their local Marvel reps and Marvel directly, and they said that they very intently listen to their concerns, but nothing has changed. You know, this is something that we've discussed with our local retailer many, many times. There'll be times, and it's not even like a lenticular cover. It'll be on a regularly big-selling book, you know, Amazing Spider-Man, because that's a book that usually has a lot of different covers, because, you know, it usually sells toward the top of things at Marvel, and I'll always say, like, hey, Dave, what's the chances on this variant? And he'll send me whatever Marvel's percentages of them were, essentially to just say, this is a ridiculous hoop that I have to jump through to get this. Unfortunately, you can't get it. Now, it doesn't deter me, because I'm not buying Amazing Spider-Man for the covers. I'm buying it because I enjoy the book, but sometimes it's like one cover I like more, and it kind of bums me out. Marvel makes the retailers jump through such hoops to get these things, where, not to say that DC's innocent in this, but obviously DC has, one, cut back on the extreme number of variants outside of like really special books. And when I say special books, I mean books I don't read. Like that Dark Knight, the Master Race thing with Frank Miller.
Right.
You know, I'm not reading that, and I'm sure in November when that Doomsday Clock thing comes out, I'm sure that'll have dozens of variant covers, right?
The same way Metal does.
Right, the same way that Metal does. They do it every once in a while. This is an instance of Marvel doing it for the entire relaunch of their line.
Mm-hmm.
And will, and, you know, and they continue to say, obviously, that you need a strong Marvel and DC to kind of lead the way for other companies to come into the market, but that stores need to make a stand in this over-ordering meet or exceed policy just to buy a bunch of books that you're not going to sell. And that Marvel should get on board of what DC has done, that if you want the variant, you should be able to order the variant. If you're going to do this line-wide, give us the option to order as many of this particular variant that we know our readers are going to want, instead of making us go through all this garbage to do so.
Two things. One, getting 70 retailers to agree is great, but you're going to have somebody break that line, and those lenticular covers are going to be such a small, you know, number of them that the people who have them are going to be able to jack the price up. And then you're going to see people crumble. You know what I'm saying? Because they'll be like, oh, they're making the money. But it doesn't work unless you, you know, boycott it. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Right.
But the other thing is, I just had a brilliant idea for a scam.
Okay, here we go.
That scam is, me and you should open up a small comic shop. We should order two copies of everything. and work it with our retailer. Like, you order two less copies of your books. We'll buy them, give them to you, and then we'll buy 170% of two books and get as many of those lenticular covers as we want.
So now here's my concern.
Mm-hmm.
We have to have some sort of pop-up storefront or something. You know, right. We just can't be, like, we can't run it out of, like, a garage or something.
You can run it out of anywhere as long as you have a tax number.
Okay. We have a tax number.
See? See? Now, you buy one of each.
I mean me.
Right, whatever. Well, I'm the scammer you're helping. So, we buy one of each copy, and then we buy, now granted, we're not going to get great discounts this way. But we buy one copy, then 170% is, what, two more copies? And then
maybe,
we can buy the...
Maybe three.
Three, and we can buy the lenticular covers. And on top of that, we're working with somebody else where, you know, those issues will be sold in the comic shop. It'll work. Do you see where I'm trying to go here?
Mm-hmm.
We'll just have to work out the details with our local retailer and figure it all out.
It seems like a lot of work.
To make a lot of lenticular money.
Listen, what is that, Canadian money that has like a picture of a goose and holograms on it?
Right, and smells like maple syrup, scratch and sniff, Canadian money. So.
Yeah, but definitely not a good idea either.
Okay.
Just seems like a lot of work.
But not for us.
I guess.
All right.
So stretch. I don't know. I didn't. To be honest with you, this was the first I knew that Marvel was doing lenticular covers for the legacy books.
Right. I kind of had a feeling. Remember when they were doing those GIFs, those Jiffies, whatever they are?
Yeah, Jiffies.
Jiffies, where they had the new cover go into the old cover of like the. I was like, they're gonna lenticular this stuff. That I mean. I wasn't 100% sure, but it just seemed like that was the route that they were going down.
They're going to lenticulate.
Right. And DC was making a ton of cabbage on their lenticular covers over the past couple times they did it. So Marvel wants some of that cash.
Right. But I feel as though they're going about it a little bit wrong, but that's me.
Oh, no, I agree. But, you know, we'll see how it all shakes out in future, you know, sales.
Absolutely. So, moving along to conventions, there's a bunch of conventions happening this weekend. The aforementioned Wizard World Chicago, with a plethora of guests. John Cusack is going to be there. Lonnie Anderson.
Ooh, WKRP.
Gene Simmons, what?
WKRP, that's signed.
Right. Gene Simmons, Michael Rooker, who we'll come back to in a little bit. Danny Trejo. Who I'd love to meet. Now, Todd, you're going to have to help me out with this one. Now, I know who David Tennant is.
Right, he's the Purple Man.
But Alex Kingston? Is that Kofi Kingston's, like, brother or something?
Yeah, that's River Song.
Okay, I don't know what they're singing about, but anyway. John Barrow Man? I know he's from the Arrow show. I don't know why he's lumped in with these people.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine Tate?
Yep, and Donna Noble.
And Jenna Coleman. I think she was on The Office, right?
Catherine Tate was on The Office.
She was?
Yes, she was.
I meant Jenna Coleman.
No, when you said that, I actually shocked me that you knew Catherine Tate was on a season of The Office. Look at you. Maybe it's in the where you looked on the website and it burned into your brain.
No, so it looks like there's a bunch of Doctor Who types that are going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, Todd.
Uh-oh, wrestlers.
There's going to be a bunch of World Wrestling Entertainers. Charlotte is going to be there.
Oh, boy.
And no unkind words there, you know.
Especially I didn't.
You were thinking something. I felt.
Me? No, just cartwheels. That's all I ever think of when I think of Charlotte.
Alexa Bliss is going to be there. Send up the fancy gentleman signal.
That's right. The Harley Quinn of wrestling.
The Hardy Boys are going to be there.
Hmm.
Guys in their late 40s still being boys. Good on them. Kevin Owens is going to be there. I don't know if you remember Kevin Owens.
I remember liking him for a hot minute.
Mm-hmm. And Roman Reigns is going to be there.
Italian precipitation.
It's very strange that WWE would be loading up with all of their entertainers in Chicago. Hmm. So close to someone's hometown. So close to the anniversary of his 1 year undefeated streak in the UFC. Very strange. Anyway.
Right.
Some other conventions happening this weekend. is the Soda City Comic Con in Columbia, South Carolina, featuring such luminaries as Roy Thomas and Jim Duggan of the Hacksaw variety.
No.
Okay.
Oh, I thought it was the guy who wrote Deadpool.
No. No, you're...
That's a
different Duggan.
Okay.
That's a Dugan.
Okay.
And unless you're... unless you're Cowboy Bill Watts, nobody else is calling him Dugan.
Do you say so?
The Fundy Fan Fest in St. John, New Brunswick, which is headlined by Kevin Smith. The Vermont Comic Con in Burlington, Vermont, which is headlined by Larry Hama. More on him later as well. But two biggies, at least for me. Obviously, that should be... the Wizard World's got a lot of big guests. But there's one in Colorado Springs, Colorado, that has somehow the aforementioned Mike Rooker is a guest. I don't know how he's going to be in Colorado and Chicago at the same time, but if anyone could do it, it's Michael Rooker.
Mm-hmm.
Sam Jones is going to be there.
Flash Gordon.
Right. Wrestlers Kevin Nash and Sting.
Ooh. Super Shredder and Kabuki Man.
Right. Zach Galligan.
Was he the guy who was in The Hangover?
No, you're thinking of Zach Galifianakis.
Okay.
Zach Galligan was Bill Pelzer from Gremlins.
Okay.
All right, Judge Reinhold is going to be there.
Oh, I love from all the Beverly Hills Cops movies.
Right. And from Mock Trial with Judge Reinhold.
Okay.
B. Williams is going to be there.
Lando.
Right. And Pauly Shore is going to be there.
Oh my, now that's the con you want to go to.
Well, you would think, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
This is the con that I want to go to. The one Todd McFarlane's going to be at.
Todd.
The Todd. Not to be confused with the Rob. William mm-hmm. Shatner.
Chris. The Shat.
The Shat. Oh my goodness. Chris Claremont.
The Claire.
Alan Tudyk.
The two.
There you go. Glad you went that way, not the other way.
Right.
This would be the amazing Hawaii Comic Convention.
Let's go to that one.
Todd, you talked before about maybe getting free passes.
Right.
To the Harry Potter convention.
Mm-hmm.
If there's nothing I can get in this world, I want to get copped to a convention in a tropical paradise.
How do you think they got Todd McFarlane?
Oh, my goodness. How do you think they got William Shatner? Come on.
I met Todd McFarlane at a con once.
No.
And he was just on the floor walking around. And I don't know if I've told this story on the show, but...
don't tell it. We don't want to hear
it. Right. But it was one of those Wonder Fans was nearby me and threw his sketchbook down on, like, back issues and demanded a sketch right on the floor from Todd McFarlane. And he's like, why aren't you going to draw it? He's like, look around for help. And he's like, well, I'm kind of on my way to somewhere. Like, I want a Todd McFarlane sketch. It was the most, like, one of the most eerie moments I've ever had at a con. And I would like to reenact that in Hawaii. Just throw down my sketchbook at Todd McFarlane and demand a Spawn sketch.
I want you to draw Spawn with a grass skirt on.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I want you to draw something.
Could you draw all your unsold Little Nicky figures in a warehouse?
Oh, not Little Nicky figures.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, the links to all of these conventions will be in the show notes when the post goes up, which will probably be very shortly after this is being recorded, live to tape. Other shows that are live to tape are the other shows in the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com or soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. Whether it be Longbox Heroes, which is us, whether it be Profane Argument, Puzzle Warriors 3, AIM Downsides podcast, of course. Pod because he had technical issues this past week. Talking Gimmicks and Paladins of Voltron are threatened to come back. Fresher and Parlance are on their bi-weekly schedule. Prime Defective, sadly hasn't had an episode of their show, in 5 months. Right on schedule. And I understand there's been at least two, possibly three episodes of Prodigal Sons podcast that were recorded and will probably never see the light of day.
What?
I don't know, Todd. It's almost as though recording and publishing a podcast is a very difficult thing that a dumb person wouldn't be able to do it.
No, it's almost like they make it for dumb people.
Right. Speaking of which, this week, one of the other shows on the soon-to-be-named network is the Longbox Heroes After Dark with our monthly Gallifrey Birds episode where I watch the, I have to look at his name, Paul Megan? Doctor
McGann.
Who? McGann. I'm sorry. It's not like I had the DVD in front of me and purposely pronounced it incorrectly. Where that I discuss this and quite possibly taking on the second best villain in the history of Doctor Who dumb, with emphasis on dumb, and Todd watches one of the most heralded pay-per-views in all of sports and entertainment, the granddaddy of them all, the showcase of the immortals, the ultimate thrill ride, WrestleMania X7.
Enough. What, do you want to run long with this podcast?
Oh my goodness. I think this episode's going to clock in at 14 minutes. just to beat the day. Oh right. My goodness. So also when you go over to long, or when you look in the show notes, you're going to see a bunch of links to a bunch of stuff that's on sale this week. A couple of the sales are left over from last week here as well. The Image Brian K. Vaughn thing is left over from last week. The Marvel Defender stuff is left over from last week. Now, apparently IW has a sale on a bunch of their Star Trek stuff that was on sale last week as well. But Todd, wouldn't you know it? Sometimes the site where you get these things, they make it real, real tough to find those links to those sales. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they do things so difficult specifically on me.
I find that getting the links for this show is really easy.
Right, for you.
For me.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. So Boom is having a sale on a bunch of their quote-unquote resets. Everything from the Grant Morrison Klaus miniseries, the ongoing Power Rangers series, the ongoing World Wrestling Entertainment series, which as I understand is very good. Do yourself a favor, folks, if you never checked it out, check out the first issue of the World Wrestling Entertainment comic so you could see the real reason that the Shield broke up. And now that they're getting back together on TV, makes me think that someone remembered something. I don't want to give it away.
The Hot Cops are getting back together?
Yes, these are the original Hot Cops, not the Fashion Police.
Okay.
And DC is having a sale on all of their Wildstorm stuff. And folks, you want to talk about a blast? You got Authority, okay, not too far in the past, but if there wasn't an Authority, there wouldn't have been an Ultimates, and if there wasn't an Ultimates, there might not have been a Marvel Cinematic Universe. They've got the original Jim Lee Image Wildcats and Stormwatch books in there, as well as Backlash, DV8, Grifter. If you want to take a walk down Image Memory Lane, help yourself. Now, there is a few interesting things in here. There is a book called Majestic, which is a miniseries, two miniseries actually, by Dan Abnett and Andy Lanning, which is kind of a Superman pastiche. I recommend that. Some of the later Wildcat stuff isn't terrible, but again, buyer beware. Just double check who the writers are on some of those things. But my recommendation out of that sale is Sleeper. They have Sleeper Season 1 in there. And this was an early collaboration between Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. So if you're a fan of their work on things like Criminal, things like Fatale, things like Killer Be Killed, check this out. It's a very interesting kind of look back at the past of what they've done and kind of where they've come over the last 14 years of being collaborators.
I would have to agree on that.
Yes. Sleeper, pun intended, a sleeper comic.
Nice.
No new freebies. All the freebies that were here last week are here this week. No changes there. So let's get into what we read from this past pod, and let's start things off with the book we were both most looking forward to coming out, which was Southern Bastards number 17, and I'll let you take point on this.
Right. This is basically after a bit of a hiatus for the book. Coach Boss, you know, it is all coming down around Coach Boss's ears, who is the coach of the Rebs, and he has a bit of a feud now with Locust Fork's version of him, basically, Colonel Quick McCluskey, or I call him Burt Reynolds. Basically, after the game, they, you know, they've come to blows over football because football's big in Alabama, and a war has broken out, and it's basically Coach Boss trying to drench that fire before it gets out, and while all the players in his world are seeing a hint of weakness and deciding to make the plays that they feel they need to survive what's coming in case Coach Box either goes down by his own hands or maybe theirs. And it's really good. I've been loving this book, but the only thing that I think that slightly hurts it is it's in the middle of a storyline, and it's been so long since we've gotten an issue. It took me a while to get my brain back into Southern Bastards, but once I did, you know, like, this is one of my favorite books. And if it was just about any other creator, except maybe Ed Brubaker, the pre-mentioned Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips, I would give him the benefit of the doubt, but you know, you can be late on this book, and I will pick it up no matter what.
Right. So I had mentioned last week that it had been since February since the last issue had come out. It actually had been since January.
Wow.
Right. So as Todd mentioned, you're in the middle of a storyline. It's tough to dive back in, but it all comes swarming back because even though it's the middle of a storyline, I think they do a really good job of kind of getting everything over to a point, reestablishing the relationships. And again, we kind of thumb our nose at this and say it's been a while since these books have come out. But if reading the back of the book, both at the same time, Jason Latour, who does the art, and the editor, both of their fathers passed away within days of each other.
Right.
So that kind of, that kind of puts a monkey wrench into what you're planning with a book.
Right.
Either way, we get our established relationships, as mentioned, how football is everything in this town, all the other businesses are secondary, and kind of thrive off this. The sheriff, I guess, who was a former football player, has decided to make the deal with the devil go ahead.
The mayor's wife,
yeah.
The mayor who is an invalid, like he's, you know, got the, you know, he's on oxygen and
yeah.
he mumbles. So she's really the power behind the throne.
Right. And there's the one scene, of course, where Coach Boss's guys, they attack the other side and then they come back and they try to burn down the football clubhouse. And of all the stuff that's in there, the striking scene to me was that Coach Boss saves all the playbooks.
Right, from the blind gentleman who was his defensive coordinator.
Right.
And it makes you wonder whether it's because he loves the coordinator or if it's just because he needs them to win football, which is the thing that could bring him down if he does. It's like really ambiguous, but, you know, with Coach Boss, it's probably just I need this to hold my power, but I want to see where it goes.
I think there's a little bit more sentimentality for this sort of stuff in Coach Boss than they kind of let on. I'm not saying that he's going to have some sort of redemption angle at the end of all of this. Obviously, I think the fact that he's one of the most evil characters in all of comic books suits him just fine. And if they did try to do something to rehab him or make him likable, I don't think it'd work.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't put it past them for trying. And the other thing that I want to mention, of course, is the one thing that they have done such a good job on with this book what's his name? Earl Tubbs, right?
Mm-hmm.
He started out as the focal point, the central character of this, And then, of course, we get the misdirect with him earlier on in the season. Ooh, the book. And we get the misdirect with his daughter. And then we forget about her for a couple issues. And I like the fact that that plot line is still being felt while this book continues to roll on, even after a 7-month absence.
Right.
And, you know, and again, spoilers a little bit, but when she shows up at the end, I'm like, oh boy, is she making her move? Or is this going to be another one of those things where she makes this one move and then we don't see her again for a couple issues, you know?
Because it could go either way, right. And whichever way it goes, Jason Aaron and Latour will make it work.
Exactly. So, you know, it's tough to jump on in the middle of a book, as we mentioned. This might be something that suits you better, getting all in trade. But either way, if you're not reading Southern Bastards, it's usually at the top of my most recommend list when people say, what are you reading? If it's not Kill or Be Killed, it's usually Southern Bastards. And now that Southern Bastards is back, I think it might move to the top of the list.
Where's Saga and all that?
Saga is kind of like a perennial favorite. I think Saga doesn't need my help to get its word out there, you know?
Okay, I'm just asking.
No,
just
Saga's asking. Good. Saga you should be reading. But it's not like if I don't recommend Saga, it's going to get canceled.
Right. Neither is Kill or Be Killed.
Right. Well, you never know. Right. Now, another book that's not going to be canceled, no matter how much we talk about it, and we do talk about it quite a bit, is Batman, issue 29 specifically, written by Tom King, with art by the fantastic Mikael Janin, the continuation of the War of Jokes and Riddles. This one is essentially Bruce Wayne, not Batman, Bruce Wayne. Everyone in Gotham still doesn't know that Bruce Wayne is Batman. I kind of sort of take it for granted that I know that he's Batman, but everyone else knows that he's Batman.
Right. I never thought that way, but go ahead.
I get that. You know, it's not like an active thought, but it's kind of like a thought in the back of my head sometimes. But anyway,
right.
He brings the Joker and the Riddler together for dinner at his house to try to broker peace, to figure out why they want to destroy the Batman, and he offers to one of them the means to get the Batman. And the cliffhanger of this is who he decides to give it to.
Right. Not so much to the Batman, who will win the war.
Right. Who will, sure.
And then, but the win the war, you get everybody. He says, like, I'm going to be the means to get everybody. And whoever I pick is basically going to get all the villains to their side. And then once you have that, it should be pretty easy pickings to take down the Batman. And then, but it's really about, well, with that, who do I want to win? What would be better for me in the long run to be able to take down? And it's interesting, but like you said, it is the cliffhanger of who he chooses. And we don't know yet till next issue.
Right, but for a book that was essentially three people sitting down for dinner, this was a great comic book.
It was. The only thing that's is interesting with me is that he has, like, as, how do I want to put this? Because I don't want to run the book down because I like Batman. It is a completely unbelievable concept done really well. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Okay.
Of Batman, or Bruce Wayne, inviting the Joker to his house for dinner. Like, how stupid that premise is, but it's done really well. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
I do. Why doesn't the Joker, who is literally a madman,
mm-hmm.
just kill Bruce Wayne just because?
Right, and the Riddler's doing his thing, and there's a bunch of, you know, the thugs that they have on their payroll there. Like I'm saying, I'm not saying it's a bad story, it's just, you're like, I see problems with the story, but, like I said, Tom King can, you know, weave a tale, so I really like it. And the best part about it is the interaction between Alfred and Bruce afterwards, like him, like Alfred just ripping him down, like how he doesn't know how to have a dinner party. I just like, it's really good. So, and I do like the fact that a lot of this time, because the other problem that I have a little bit with Tom King is sometimes too much happens off panel in this storyline.
Okay.
But this nothing, it's all here on the page. So I enjoyed that.
And again, on the page, of course, and what a page. You know, we talked before many times about Michael Janin's art specifically. And I tell you, there are some beautiful two-page spreads in this book that are just remarkable.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? I have to give props looking for who did it June Chung, because I think the coloring definitely helps his artwork.
Okay.
Like, you know how we always joke, and it goes back to, I think, I don't know how many shows ago, that colorists are the new inkers?
Right, sure.
Like, they can make or break you. And I really think the whites and, like, the hints of color on especially the Joker's face, because he's a pale, pasty white, where when he has the little bit of darkness and, like, the red lip, like, it pops. It really pops.
Who is the colorist on this?
I said the name just now. June Chung.
Okay. Interesting. I wonder. I think he's been the colorist on most of this stuff.
Right. We don't give them the props that I think they deserve. And I was just thumbing through this issue as we were talking, and it just jumped out at me.
Right. At the very least, it's a very beautiful book. Highly recommended, at least just for that alone.
Right.
So the last book that we're going to discuss is the one Todd had suggested, which is a one-shot kind of issue. Star Wars number 34, written by Jason Aaron, with art by Salvador LaRocca. It is a Sana Solo and Lando Calrissian adventure.
Mm-hmm. The thing that I like about this is that we get to see Sana. Is that her name, Sana or Sansa? Sana, I'm sorry. And Lando, who, because of where it's placed, we won't get a lot of Lando Calrissian stories, because you can't have him meet up with the main group. You might be able to get away with having him see Han for a little bit. But I like it because I think Jason Aaron definitely crushed the whole scoundrel with a bit of a bad luck streak of Lando Calrissian.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that I love. So I love his story and how Sana just basically completely plays him through the issue. And then on top of that, like, LaRocca can capture a likeness, but for something about his – he just has a love for Billy Dee, I think. Because his Lando Calrissian is perfect. Perfect. Like, occasionally you might go, oh, that face on Luke Skywalker is wonky, or Han is doing. At no point do I say that ever in this issue with his Lando Calrissian.
Right. Definitely a really good book. I think in this particular instance, as you mentioned, it's tough to have a character that shows up for the first time in Empire, interact with the main cast in this book. But now, you've introduced all these new characters, whether it be Sana here, or let's say it's, you know, Dr. Aphra, whoever it is.
Right.
You could start having those characters, the new comic characters, interact with, you know, everyone from Lando to the Ewoks.
Same way you can't have Yoda with this character. And you don't want to go too far, because the trouble is then you get to the Empire. Between Jedi is because you lose pretty much like one of the fan favorite characters, Han. So you can't have Lando interact with Leia or Luke because they never met him until later. And then you can have Lando and you lose Han. You know what I mean? And that's not the trade-off that people want, I think.
No.
So, it's interesting, but I like it. It's done very well, and it works Lando into the book at the time, and I'm fine with it, and I would like to see Jason Aaron do a little more Lando stories, especially since he's leaving the book. I forget at what number off the top of it.
He's only got two more issues left.
Right, which makes me sad, because this has been amazing, but they are not going to skimp on whoever they get for Star Wars, because I don't know if you know this, makes them some cabbage in issues and trades.
Well, I think we've talked about it before when the announcement happened a couple months ago that Kieran Gillen has taken over the book.
There you go.
This November. I think they're shipping two issues that month. The November solicitations are out as you're listening to this. And then, you know, the official list of everything will be out probably by the end of the day on Wednesday. But yeah, you know, that's when a majority of the Marvel stuff is out. All the new creative teams are coming onto books like this, or Doctor Strange, Thanos, things like that. A lot of the DC stuff is all the Doomsday Clock advanced solicitation stuff. There's a bunch of stuff that's like advanced solicited for December in, or November is like another 5-week month. So there's a lot of stuff that's coming out that week of Thanksgiving as opposed to last week in the month, which is usually where a lot of stuff, falls in these 5-weekers. I think they're assuming everyone's going to be home for the holidays, so they want to make sure that there's enough stuff in the shops when everybody is home for the Thanksgiving holiday.
Right.
Star Wars is and continues to be a good book. So, you know what? We'll save a full discussion about that maybe toward the end for Jason Aaron's last issue.
Right.
So, moving along, we've kind of wrapped up what we talked, read this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com, every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them mailed to your house, whether you get them in trade, whether you get the oversized hardcover, whether you wait outside the comic shop and steal them off someone else who just purchased them and you take your chances with whatever they bought, however it is that you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out. Make a note for yourself to get enough bags in back so you're not looking like a fool. So, two of the things that Todd and I have been attempting to do with the pull post. One is the ongoing thing of attempting to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out. I think Todd has two up on that point. Is that correct?
I think so, yes.
Yes. And we're
also... I don't keep those stats. What do I know?
Right. I should start fudging those stats, see if you or anyone else calls me out on it. Anyway. We also are keeping track of the number of books that we've purchased by publisher, so at the end of the year we could look at the mass of comics that we purchased. Next year, reminder, we're doing dollar spent as opposed to books purchased.
We could do whatever we want, both or none, it doesn't matter. Right. We'll see.
So Todd, you started the show, so you are guessing first.
Is the book you are looking forward to most Generations, The Unworthy Thor and Mighty Thor?
No.
What?
Now, I'm going to guess that that's the book you're most looking forward to coming out this week.
Yes. Okay. Is it Angry Birds, Furious Fowl?
Oh, yes, absolutely. No. Under normal circumstances, any other week, any other month, a Jason Aaron penned Thor book is top of the list, the book I'm most looking forward to coming out. However, based on the events of the past 3 issues of this book, the book I am most looking forward to coming out this week is Archie number 23.
Boom. Gained some ground.
It's a continuation of the cliffhanger from last issue, which we talked about at length here about a month or so ago. And I want to see what happens with that cliffhanger. They got me. They got me to pick that over a Thor book.
Fair enough.
Yes. As I'm sure you would be reading that anyway, and I'm sure we would be talking about one or both, if not all of those books, next week.
Right.
So again, was not done to get ground, but when I was looking at my list, and then I looked at the, you know, the previews and stuff up to see what I'm going to put in the links for next week, and I saw that they're like, based on the fallout of last month's issue, and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. And then skittered right to the top of the list.
Right.
That little skitter noise, like how comics move.
Okay.
So while you're over at Longbox Heroes, be sure to check out everything and all the things that are over there, whether it be every episode of this dumb show, every episode of the other dumb show that we do, every poll, every Todd and Joe have issues, everything that we've ever done on the internet exists there. As does the link to our store, where you can purchase a t-shirt or purchase a sticker with our fancy logo on it, done by our good friend and DC Comics artist extraordinaire Todd Renick. If you don't want a shirt or a sticker for some reason, and when Todd gets off his can and gets pins, I'll be sure to feature them prominently there. I don't know if you see me winking into the microphone. But if you don't need any of those things, you can always click the Amazon banner across the top of our page. Amazon has anything and everything that your heart could want. And the other thing that it wants for us is a little bit of a kickback for every purchase you make. Now, Todd has a list of the things that we've purchased, or some of the notable purchases, through the Amazon link this past week, such as someone purchased a Tascam DR40 handheld digital recorder. Now, they also included a bunch of cables and so on and so forth. It looks like someone is starting their own podcast off the back of our podcast.
Hey, as long as they buy all the equipment through our link, I'm fine with it.
Right. If that's you, let us know. Maybe we'll, talk to you about your podcast or something.
True.
Someone also purchased season one of Leftovers on DVD. I don't know what that is. I thought it was a cooking show at first, but the cover of the DVD didn't look like no cooking show I'd never seen.
Right.
Someone also purchased a Fire HD tablet with Alexa built in. And Todd, if you would click the link there for the other item that was purchased.
I'm doing it now.
Someone purchased a Jogal Men's Metallic Nightclub Style Zip-Up Varsity Baseball Bomber Jacket.
You know what color?
Well, it defaults to the gold color when you click on the link, even though they do have a variety of sizes.
Ooh, that is sweet.
Now, I don't want to tip my hand too much, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
But next Thursday is a very special anniversary. And I don't want to postulate or guess that someone is possibly purchasing such an illustrious and shiny item for such an anniversary. Just think of that special day 2 years ago.
Oh, boy. Look at all the colors it comes into.
Both of them.
No, there's blue, gold, gold with silver arms, pink, red, silver, and silver with gold arms. Oh, my goodness. That's fantastic. And you can get a matching baseball cap. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, and they have them in my size as well.
Oh, tiny hat?
Yeah, tiny hat size.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, everyone, who purchased any and all of these items through our Amazon click-through. Every purchase helps us feel a little bit better about ourselves and feel good at the end of the day.
Right.
Todd, was there any Todd's Art Attacks this week?
Not this week.
All right. So, last but not least, is Todd and Joe Have Issues. And this week's issue is G.I. Joe number 21, written by Larry Hama, and I got with art by Larry Hama as well.
Right. Breakdowns? I don't think he finished it, but...
I tell you, though, you know, Keith Giffen gets credit for, you know, breakdowns in a lot of the JLI issues, you know?
Early on, but I could see the difference. So I don't know. I'd have to see, you know, before and after. I don't know if you know this. I know a little bit about certain art from certain artists. So. Mm.
Gotcha. So... this is the infamous silent issue of G.I. Joe. One of the more famous issues in all of comics, I think.
Yeah, and I would say so.
The basic plot is Scarlet gets kidnapped by Storm Shadow. Snake Eyes makes a lone mission to save her. Not that she needs any saving. Early, little talked about... Tough independent woman in the world of comics.
Right.
I don't think Scarlet gets her due.
Yes, because in this, he doesn't save her so much as he shows up when she's ready.
Right, there you go.
So, I mean, granted, they both, you know, save each other at one point, but it's not like the damsel in distress.
Right.
It's, yes, I did get captured, but I'm on top of this. And it is cool because you get to see her break out of where she's going, and Snake Eyes shows up. And I never read G.I. Joe, the Larry Hama stuff. My one friend is a huge G.I. Joe Larry Hama guy, so he always talks about it. Scott is big on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So we discuss that kind of stuff. But it makes me wonder, too, because the one thing that popped out at me, other than the great story, great idea of a quiet issue, especially with the character who really doesn't talk, Snake Eyes, the thing that I wonder is if it's the first we ever noticed that Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes have the same tattoo.
I was going to bring that up. I also think that this is absolutely the first time that it was mentioned.
Right, because he gets his cut while he's fighting, and as you're leaving, you see it, and you're like, oh, that's the Storm Shadow tattoo. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that's really cool. And I could, that would instantly, that's a beautiful, like, hey, there's more to this than meets the eye. And instantly,
no,
I'm like, that is true. The 50th best toy company comic book. But I was just kind of like, instantly made me want to learn more of why they have the same tattoo. Like, instantly.
Right. And that's what a comic should do. Mm-hmm. When, you know, the way a cliffhanger works, you know, we talked before about the Archie issue, of course, how the cliffhanger there makes me want to read that next issue as soon as I can get my hot little hands on it. Whereas mm-hmm. seeing that ending, and I haven't read a G.I. Joe comic in years either, but reading that and seeing that, you know, that they, you know, the reminder that they both had the same tattoo, something as an old man that I knew, but seeing it in the comic, I can't imagine being a reader of the G.I. Joe comic at that time. You're almost 2 years into the book, and there's a reveal that they're both from the same ninja clan. That must have blown people's minds. Because
mm-hmm.
I don't think that was something that was really... Well, first of all, you have to keep in mind that these issues came out much earlier in the 80s than the cartoon did. I think
right.
this issue has a published date of like sometime in 84, and I don't think the cartoon of the toys even, well no, the toys were already out, but I don't think that we were at the time where like the Storm Shadow figures were out. So
right.
we knew that Snake Eyes had some sort of ninja training, but we did not know the relationship with Storm Shadow.
Right, we knew he had a martial arts training, but not where it came from.
Right, and I are going to contact me to let me know the correct information, and I will have my retraction and corrections here next week.
Right.
So actually, I think this was right around the time Storm Shadow figure came out.
Probably, because they probably had some where it was like, all right, this is what you have to do. And Larry Hamill was writing the cards on the back and starring in MASH and all that other good stuff.
Right. So looking at this here, the relationship was never set up on the cartoon. It was teased on the file cards, and really it was... You know, the comics and the toy line later, after it was established in the comic books, where this became a thing.
Right, Cobra Commander was a used car salesman in the comics.
Right, and actually this is his first appearance in the comics, actually.
Whose?
Storm Shadow.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yes.
I did not know that. I figured he was around before this, and they had built up to this, you know mm-hmm. what I mean?
Well, I think, you know, obviously, you know, we get this establishment of who this ninja is, and, you know, we've already seen Snake Eyes over the last several issues, and here's this person who's on Cobra's side who obviously has the same training as he.
Right.
Yeah. So, this is a really good book. Makes me want to read more G.I. Joe comics today.
Me too, actually.
So what's your book for us to read and talk about next week?
The book that I have picked for next week is Batman 424 by, people forget, Jim Starlin, Mr. Marvel Cosmic, wrote Batman, and he was actually the one who killed Jason Todd, even though it was a 900 number ploy. And Mark Bright did the art, and it's the beginning. Beginning of the slippery slope for Jason Todd. This is one of those early stories that's like, you know, the classic story of Jason going down that road of becoming like, you know, a lost soul and all that. And it's been a real long time since I've read any of Jim Starlin's Batman, but I really remember liking it and that being my era of like collecting some Batman back in the day. So I'm looking forward to rereading this.
What was the number again?
424.
Okay. And some of the other something fours, and that one wasn't coming up.
We're not playing golf, Joe.
All right.
Four. See what I did there?
Oh, my goodness.
I made a great joke after a long podcast.
I'll be very excited to check this one out. Very unassuming cover. mid to late 80s on this one. And yeah, you forget how much Jim Starlin did over at DC, and specifically how different it was than his Marvel stuff.
Right.
So I guess, is there anything else that we need to talk about? Anything else that we need to cover?
How many episodes of Defenders you watched?
Oh, yes. We can talk a little bit about Defenders, because I watched 3 episodes.
Did you really?
I really did. Obviously, with so much wrestling this weekend, with NXT, with SummerSlam being 14 hours, having to watch the Doctor Who stuff, having family in from out of town, I still was able to squeeze in 3 episodes of the Defenders.
And I would like you to change it from having watched Doctor Who to getting to watch Doctor Who.
Oh, having the privilege of?
Right, yes. not like having to watch Doctor Who. I get to watch Doctor Who.
Right, it's a delightful treat.
There you go.
So what I watch of it first, you know, first of all, it's only 8 episodes, so I could certainly see myself finishing it within the next couple weeks.
Right. next couple weeks.
Of the 3 that I watched, episode 3 was definitely the best.
Mm-hmm.
This is when all the little pieces of the puzzle all start to come together. All the stuff that Jessica Jones and Luke Cage and Daredevil, and Iron Fist, a.k.a. Bum Fist, a.k.a. Bummy Rogers, a.k.a. all the dumb names that we have for the stupid Marvel Puzzle Quest group. But all that's starting to come together, of course, not having seen much of Daredevil, any of Iron Fist, most of Luke Cage. They do a really good job of catching people up and comic knowledge, of course. You know, like when Elektra shows up, I'm like, okay, I know that's Elektra. You know, there's no confusion there. And, you know, spoilers, everyone, for shows that I didn't watch. You know, they do a good job of explaining why Luke Cage is in jail and now getting out of jail. They do a good job of explaining why Matt Murdock gave up being Daredevil and why he goes back to being Daredevil, why him and Foggy are no longer together. They do a really good job of doing all of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
I felt the strongest parts, of course, were the Jones stuff, her doing investigating stuff.
Right.
There's one scene in particular, and I may have some of the specifics about it just a smidge wrong. So she goes to the architecture firm.
Right.
To do the interview as though she's like sort of person who's looking to hire them to build something for her.
Right.
And on the show, Kristen Ritter plays Jessica Jones as a miserable, cantankerous drunk.
Mm-hmm.
So now she is having to take on a role to get this guy to give her the information that she wants. And I felt her acting in that scene specifically was so good. Everything from her body language to the looks on her face as she was living these lines that she was probably hating to have to do.
Right.
But the sacrifices that you make when you're an investigator.
The vapid, empty-headed, stupid,
yes,
like, demand she has for a building. Like, you know, we want spaces, and and you're like, this is fantastic. And she does that a lot in the season 1 of Jessica Jones.
Right.
Like, she does that character to, like, you know, pull out information from people so far from the character that she is that it's absolutely you're like, yeah, like she would punch in the face of the person that she's pretending to be right now.
Exactly.
And I'm with you. Jessica Jones, like, is like her thing is the breakout of all the characters, but like the series ties into her story so little where it's so heavy on what happened in the last season of, because Iron Fist was right before, and it's almost literally Daredevil season 2.5.
Okay.
So, because it basically sets up, it basically finish up what happened in Daredevil, and as it's all over, it really kicks into what's going to be Daredevil season 3.
Which they just announced, and I think they released a teaser for Punisher recently.
Yes, that was at the, I mean, it doesn't spoil anything. There's a teaser that's not footage from the show. It's just like they shot specifically for it, that when you watch the final episode of Defenders, it's at the end. It's in the middle of the, not, it's not a mid credits thing because they have the American credits for Netflix. Then they show that ad and then they have like, I don't know if you've ever noticed at the end of Netflix shows because they show it all over the world. It has all the credits in different languages too.
Oh, okay.
So like after the American credits, it's like, oh, here's the trailer. And then here's the Korean credits and the Russian credits or whatever. So.
So obviously you got a chance to see the whole thing and you enjoyed it very much.
I loved it for the compressed 8-episode season, which I think is the downfall like of most of the Marvel Netflix shows. Is you're like, hey, we're going to have 13. And around 8, you're like, we didn't need this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we could have slowed, we could have wrapped it up in 10. And 8 really works. And the thing I love the most about Defenders, and it goes away when it starts interacting more, is the color schemes for each of the characters while they're doing their scenes. So if you watch it, you realize, well, Danny Rand is doing his things. There's a green hue to
yes.
the story, and when Power Man yellow, and when you're doing Jessica Jones, there's a purple and red for Daredevil, and it really works. But then once you get the team together and they start teaming up, you know, it's all a la It's Always Sunny, these characters teaming up and going away, they still use it to like, if Daredevil and Jessica go to see the architect's family, and he you know, no spoilers really, but because that's a heavy scene, even though Matt's there, it's still in purple, but you can't do that a lot because then the characters start being multiple like characters in the same scene. But up until then, I really like the way they did it.
Right, and I think a lot of that, as you mentioned, with the color scheme, of course, and then we have that big fight at the end of episode 3, and it's against so many of the other fight sequences were, you know, whether it be the darker hues for the purple, the reds, happening in alleys, happening in sewers, happening in abandoned buildings, all this stuff. That fight scene at the end of episode 3, and again, you know, everyone kind of goes back to that big hallway fight scene from the first season of Daredevil, and I feel as though they're always trying to recapture that.
A little too much sometimes, yes.
Right, and while I do feel as though they were trying to capture the feel of that in this, it definitely felt like its own thing because now you have the fight happening in this wide open space. It's bright. It's white. You get to see everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that added so much to it. It made it for to hide mistakes. And, you know, I didn't get a chance to watch it, so obviously I can't comment on it. But a lot of people remarked that the biggest problem with Bumfist was mm-hmm. the fight choreography was so bad.
And it was god-awful.
Okay. And I feel so far of what I've seen here, the fight choreography is done very well. And specifically going back, I think at the end of episode 2, where Luke and Danny have their fight, and there's one instance where they do a bit of slow motion that DC does so much.
Mm-hmm.
When you do it all the time, it doesn't have the same impact of doing it once.
Right. Less is more sometimes.
Right.
And the thing with the fights is you saw 3 ends pretty much with them in the Chinese restaurant.
No, it's them in the elevator going down. I think episode 4 begins with them in the Chinese restaurant.
Okay, well, the end of 4, like 3 is really good. So did you see 4 yet?
I only watched 3 episodes.
I got confused. We're talking.
It's okay.
3 is really good. Like 3, 4, and kind of 5, like right there, that's your, like that, and it's not spoiling anything because you're obviously seeing the group coming together in the elevator, and after that, and that's when the group starts to mesh because you've hit 4. You only have 3 episodes or 4 episodes left after that. And then the big battle at the end is really cool. Once again, the choreography is great. So in the end, I highly recommend Defenders. I was wondering, because you didn't watch a lot of the shows, you're telling me you saw some of it and it was easy to understand where it was. For me, seeing all the episodes of every show, I like how it all comes together from their shows, if that makes any sense.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, is there anything else we want to discuss about this?
Nope, I think that's everything.
All right, so thank you, everyone, for listening to episode 60 of Longbox Heroes. For Todd, this is Joe, and we will catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.